back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune with this pre-election special edition of the show. We had a number of texters with Jim Allen from the Chicago Board of Elections. A lot of the texters, though, actually out in the suburbs. What I'd encourage you to do is truly go to the Chicago Board of Elections website. Even if you live in the suburbs, there's a listing of the David Orr's office for if you live in the Cook County suburbs, listings for all of the Collier County election authorities. If you've got questions, give those folks a call. I mean, it's very important. People with questions about whether or not they receive mail-in ballots, those kinds of things. Give those election authorities a call. And as far as registration, I guess some folks were saying that they have a college-age student who's at home for this election and they're registered downstate. You can register. You can still register up here at that if that's your address. But you have to have proof of address, those kinds of things. So, but any questions, please give those election authorities a call. Thought it was interesting. So in Illinois, we have a commercial from the re-election-seeking Republican governor that has a character who looks straight in the camera and drops a bleeped F-bomb. Well, in Texas, there is a female Air Force combat veteran, MJ Hager, and she's airing a closing ad in her challenge to Republican Congressman John Carter. I want you to listen.
Congressman Carter, I'm MJ Hager. You know, the lady that you're at war with? Well, respectfully, Congressman, you don't know about war. I did 3 tours in Afghanistan, and I'm here to tell you that a campaign is a discussion about issues. But then again, it seems you're afraid of that, too. You refuse to debate me. You haven't held a public town hall with your constituents in over 5 years. What exactly are you afraid will happen, Congressman? Are you afraid that we'll ask you questions about your voting record to gut health care protections for people with pre-existing conditions? Your vote against the Violence Against Women Act? Your billion-dollar tax breaks for your big donors? Or are you just afraid you'll lose to a girl?
That's combat veteran, Air Force combat veteran MJ Hager, who's challenging Republican Congressman John Carter in a Texas congressional district. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Skyline studios, my good friend, former colleague at the Tribune, now Director of Investigations for the Better Government Association, Bob Sector. Bob, thank you so much.
Yeah, nice to be in the new studios if I could get here.
Yes, sorry about that race, the hot chocolate race. And having a better judgment is another good friend of the program, David Yepsen, the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale, and now the host of Iowa Press on Iowa Public Television, and David calling us from Des Moines, so he did not have to try to figure out a way to get to the studio today. David, thank you so much for joining me.
It's good to be with you, Rick.
So I kind of want to start coming off of that ad from Texas, though, and just what are expectations about a blue wave? You know, we've heard so much about it. I just don't know. I don't know whether to believe polling. I mean, I'm seeing polling that shows polling this morning that the generic ballot that had Democrats at one time plus 14 is down to plus 8. I think it was always reasonable to expect things tighten up as you get closer to Election Day. But as far as a blue wave, I just don't know. David, what do you think?
I think there'll be something of a blue wave. Maybe in some places it may just be a blue slosh. won't be quite a wave. I think what we're seeing is all races tighten up at the end. I think Republicans around the country are starting to come home. Some of them had some trepidations. But throughout American history, midterm elections have always been bad for the party in the White House, and I think that that's very true this cycle. And so this should come as no surprise. It's for the most part, I think it's going to be a pretty good election day for Democrats around the country.
Bob?
I agree. I think we're a little ginchy simply because of what happened 2 years ago.
Right.
And so everybody is rightfully wary about saying the polls will predict this. That said, your question is, what do they predict? And we're headed in that direction. It seems like even Donald Trump is kind of acknowledging that the House might be lost.
Well, and indeed, his travels, these final dates travels, and the White House guidance was even that he wasn't going necessarily to places of contested House seats as much as he was going to places now where it's saving the Senate. And David?
Yeah, and Rick, I think that's probably the best use of his time. He, in fact, having said that, I think it's going to be a good year for Democrats. I also think you could actually see Republicans picking up seats in the Senate for a variety of reasons, just by the nature of the exposure Democrats have in Republican Trump states. And then there are things like what's happened in North Dakota. You referenced it earlier, which is just an outrage that to disenfranchise Native Americans the way that that's been done. And there's so many examples around the country of efforts like this to for what are called turnout suppression if you're a Democrat, or protecting the ballot and the integrity of the elections if you're a Republican. We may wake up the day after the election and discover that this has been pretty widespread, and it has really hurt turnout in minority neighborhoods.
Well, and I mean, you see things, I forget what community it was, where their lone polling place was moved outside the community.
Dodge City, Kansas, of all places.
Well, I don't understand the rationale of that, other than to try to engage in some form of voter dissuasion.
Yeah.
Another example is in Georgia. There are examples all over the country, but in Georgia, there have been voter purges of the electorate. You've got the Secretary of State there as a Republican in a close race with the Democrat Stacey Adams. The Republican in that race is the Secretary of State. So you've got situations there, and in Kansas, where the people supervising the elections are the ones who are running the elections. So, yeah, like I say, in a few days after the election, there are going to be lots of stories of outrage, I think.
We're speaking with David Yepsen and also Bob Sector. This is our pre-election roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, along with the BGA's Bob Sector and David Yepsen. And, you know, Bob and I were talking off air, David, but I think you'd agree here, too, is that, you know, when you look at the economy, you look at the jobs report from October, this, on its face, should be a Republican kind of year. Despite, you know, obviously the party in power rule, but this should be a Republican year, and yet we have the President of the United States talking about caravans of migrants that are hundreds of miles away from the border, and now we have troops on the border that are putting up what he calls beautiful barbed wire.
Yes, and I think that's because this election really isn't about the economy. It's about the culture, and our divisions are now over things like educational levels. Race is still an issue, and I think the culture wars are at work in this election, and passions are very high on all sides. Despite the fact that the aggregate numbers of the economy are good, you know, a lot of people don't feel it. Out here in rural America, you've got soybean prices at lowest levels in years. There will be rural crises around the country as some of these tariffs start.
Well,
to
I was just going to. So, I was just going to ask: Is that largely because of the trade wars?
It's in part because of the tariffs and the trade wars. Certainly, it sets a bad psychological tone in these places. So. You're right. The big numbers look good, but there are still a lot of people that aren't feeling it.
Yeah, we were what we're talking about off the air is that the president of the United States, who can't, he has an insatiable appetite for attention, and he has created this self-inflicted wound for his own House majority. With the tweets, with the comments, with the, frankly, overt bigotry or appeals to overt bigotry. And a lot of people are just uncomfortable with that, especially the suburbanites here in the Chicago area and elsewhere who just don't buy that. And that's created the climate that is might hurt his party.
Well, and it was interesting, you know, just a few days ago when Speaker Ryan was here to try to help save two vulnerable Republican incumbents, Randy Hultgren and Peter Roskam. And Ryan's principal job was try to refocus and reframe the debate, which had been issues involving repeal of Obamacare and repealing protections for pre-existing conditions, and reframe it into the tax bill and the economy, and tried, you know, but here we are, we're just, you know, we're hours away from the election. You know, I question whether it's too late to reframe the debate.
Yeah, it's also in Illinois, at least, because we're one of those high tax states. The tax bill doesn't quite work well for the suburban Republican constituents either, so that works against Hultgren as well.
Well, and Roskam, yeah. I mean, and here Peter Roskam, who was basically the architect of this, mm-hmm. is head of the Tax Policy Committee of Ways and Means, and when you start putting limitations on state and local tax deduction in a high property tax state, and you're in a high property tax 6th congressional district in the western and northwestern suburbs, I don't understand where that works for Peter Roskam to be in that position. David?
Well, another factor, and you mentioned this, you talk about the suburbs, you're talking about women in the suburbs particularly, and one of the things that's happening around the country, and you can see it in some of this polling, is that a lot of blue-collar women who voted for Trump are having second thoughts, but for a variety of reasons, but it's in part because they don't feel some of the promises that were made, some of these crude things that are going on in our society, the coarsening of the dialogue. I mean, you just aired a couple clips about with the profanities in our political advertising. I mean, they're using words that I can't use on this radio station now. And what does that say? And I think it offends a lot of people, but I think there are a lot of women, blue-collar women voters especially, who are either going to stay home or they're quietly going into the voting booth and they're going to be voting for a different party this time.
Yeah, and I wonder about the stay-home factor, too. You know, and in part because of things like coarse advertising or just negative, the just overtly negative advertising, and just how much does that dissuade people from even casting a vote?
I think it does, and I think it's part of the strategies of modern day campaigns is turnout suppression. You don't just go out and get a nomination and then and fire up your troops and try to dive to the center and get independent votes anymore. I mean, that is so Richard Nixon. What you do now as a candidate is you get a nomination, you fire up the base, and then you keep firing it up, and you do things, stunts and campaign things designed to depress the turnout of your opposition. And it's little wonder that while it's great to hear your election officials talking about a larger turnout, the fact of the matter is there are going to be a lot of Americans who are fed up with it all and will just stay home.
Bob?
Yeah, what we don't know, we're seeing these record early voting numbers. And some of that might be simply because early voting really hasn't been around that long. So every year it grows a little bit simply because it's something new and more convenient. But we may have in-person voting might not be that good. And in the end, they might even each other out.
Well, I mean, one thing, though, that Jim Allen mentioned was the number of these mail-in votes, I believe it was, that were people that hadn't voted in the primaries. So he's sensing that that might be an indicator of an enthusiasm issue, because that was part of my question, is mm-hmm. how much of it is early voting and convenience that trades off from election day turnout versus how much of is an enthusiasm factor.
Yeah, this is going to be a turnout election, and we don't know which side is more motivated. We hear a lot about Democrats being motivated because they really, really, really don't like Trump. The question that you alluded to a second ago, Rick, is that how much of that Trump base is kind of going to be turned off by him?
David?
I think the Trump base is pretty motivated too, and a lot of them will be turning out. But I mean, the Republicans have to go beyond the Trump base,
right,
in order to win elections, and that's the great conundrum they have. It's impossible to be a moderate Republican today. You can ask Jeff Flake how that works, and so you've got to, as a Republican, you've got to court the Republican base. The Trump base, while at the same time trying to reach out to moderates. It's a difficult dance. I see that it's one that Governor Rauner is having difficulty doing. So you look at the lines outside those Trump rallies, the Trump base is there. But where are the moderates, particularly in some of these larger states? Where are the centrists? And some of them will stay home. Some of them are angry. And so I think both are right. You can early voting can cannibalize turnout on election day, but there are going to be net new voters here.
We're speaking with David Yepsen and Bob Sector. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. We'll continue our roundtable with David Yepsen from Iowa Press and Bob Sector from the BGA. But right now, it's 8:30. Time for the news. Here's Dave Schwann.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. We're continuing our roundtable with David Yepsen from Iowa Press, formerly of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale, and with Bob Sector from the BGA. And David, I have a clip I want to play that I saved just for you. This is Republican Congressman Steve King, who's facing intense criticism for most recently promoting and meeting with self-professed white nationalists in other countries. At a recent event, King kicked a questioner out of his event.
This Saturday, there was a shooting at a synagogue in Pittsburgh that tragically left 11 people dead. And the terrorist who committed this crime, he was quoted as saying, "They bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit back and watch our people get slaughtered." You, Steve King, have been quoted as saying, "We can't restore our civilization with other people's babies." You and the shooter both share an ideology that is...
No, don't you do that. Do not associate me with that shooter. I knew you were an ambusher when you walked in the room, but there's no basis for that, and you get no question, and you get no answer. No, you're done. We don't play these games here in Iowa. No, you're done. You crossed the line. It's not tolerable to accuse me to be associated with a guy that shot 11 people in Pittsburgh. I am a person who has stood with Israel from the beginning. The length of that nation is the length of my life. And I've been with them all along, and I will not answer your question, and I'll not listen to another word from you. And this is over if he keeps talking. This is over if you don't stop talking. I'm leaving.
I think you've given his answer.
Yeah, stop it.
Sir, that's it.
You're done. I would ask whoever is guarding this door to lead this man out of the room.
So, David, are the voters in Northwest Iowa going to lead Steve King out of this room?
Well, I don't know. It's close. This is a race. What little polling there is on it shows it's just by a few points. This is in a district that's got a 70,000 vote Republican registration edge.
Yeah,
the last time I looked, and so Steve King is Steve King, but he's brought a lot of embarrassment to the state with some of his comments about Latinos. You know, this is an area of the country that needs Latino labor to run meatpacking plants and dairies, and so there's a real debate about whether people have had enough of Steve King. I think he may survive. The Des Moines Register had a poll this morning that shows the governor, Reynolds, who's in a dead-even race of her own, the Republican governor, runs about 6 points, a few points ahead of King in the Republican generics of that district. And you know, a Republican should be running away with that district, and so she's winning, but he's not doing quite as well. But that clip just it went viral because both sides loved it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yes,
tweeting the thing. Here was somebody standing up to Steve King, calling him out, and here was Steve King acting tough and putting this guy down, and a lot of people love that. So that's one of those political incidents where, you know, both sides claim a win.
Yeah, you know what caught my ear here is that this sort of is emblematic of the broad stereotyping and soft or even hard bigotry of what's happened in the country. The guy asks a question, and King says, "I've been a supporter of Israel," because apparently now, if you're Jewish, you are a supporter of Israel. There is no, you know, there's no question about it. They equate Jews with Israel, and that's just not the case in this country.
Interesting dynamic. I mean, I've been telling people, I remember when Christy Vilsack ran against Steve King, and it's like of all the congressional districts to pick to run in, that when she ran, that was probably not the time to do it. But this time, you know, this could have been the time.
Yeah, the Democrats have a very attractive candidate, a fellow named J.D. Scholten. He's a former minor league baseball player. He's worked very hard for the last couple years. And Steve King has not run a very good campaign. And it's one of those situations where the Democrats may have caught him napping. He's trying to catch up, but for a Democrat to outraise a Republican in a rural district like Iowa in fundraising is just incredible. But the Democrats have done that, so that'll be one to watch. It's going to be a close election over here, Rick. You got four congressional races. There's a scenario that all four of them wind up with the Democrats. I think at least two of them are likely to could flip the close races. So it's going to be an interesting night over here in Western Iowa.
Well, I want to shift gears to the Illinois state races, and I know tangentially we've kind of talked about Governor Rauner, and I wrote a story in today's Tribune about the power of the suburbs and how while the talk about a blue wave, you know, it's actually been an encroaching wave in Chicago's traditionally Republican suburbs, and how things have changed. But I said kind of an example of how topsy-turvy things are is who was campaigning in Lombard in DuPage County yesterday? J.B. Pritzker. Where was Governor Rauner? 300 miles south, David, tailgating outside Saluki Stadium. I mean, where are the votes here?
Well, you guys know it better than I do, but
well, you know, right, Saluki Stadium.
Illinois politics, I was referring to. I think Republicans, he's got to be firing up his base. He tried to dance around Trump's visit a little bit, was kind of off to the side when he was down there in Murfreesboro. But yeah, if you're a Republican, you got to be worried about that base, and that's what Bruce Rauner is worried.
The problem for Governor Rauner, though, is what is his base? He has angered the far right. The middle he is angered. He obviously Democrats aren't going to go for him. He's really in a vice right here.
Well, and I mean, why do you still have trouble unifying what should be the party base or trying to rev up the base 72 hours before an election. I mean, that in and of itself seems to be problematic.
Yeah, you think about it, 4 years ago, when Rahner won, he ran as a socially moderate Republican, and that still worked in Illinois. Apparently, at least because of the Trump factor, that no longer works. And so he's kind of in a vice here. And, you know, what those people in the suburbs who may have voted for him last time may not go for him this time, partly because he's so wishy-washy on these things now, but partly because they're looking at Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
Well, I think you've got that factor. Plus, I think more that Rahner ran last time, he was a blank slate Republican. Mm-hmm. Well, David, we know what's on the slate.
Right. And last time it was anybody but Quinn.
Right.
People were fed up with Pat Quinn, wanted somebody who could do something different. I don't see a path for Bruce Rahner in this election anymore, and for just the reasons Bob mentioned. And the question is, you know, what's it do to races down ballot?
I think is a definite issue. And in fact, in my story, and I didn't have a chance to get into it, but Lee Daniels, who was the former House Speaker, actually for 2 years interrupting Mike Madigan's long tenure since 1983, Speaker from 95 to 97, was basically talking about how, you know, where does this affect some of these legislative races? And there's a ton of legislative races in suburban DuPage County that, you know, there are Republicans under challenge, there are open seats, and that Democrats have a big opportunity to expand their majorities. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pierce from the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by Bob Sector, senior editor at the Better Government Association, and David Yepsen, host of Iowa Public Television's Iowa Press, formerly from the Paul Simon Policy Institute at SIU. You know, this whole issue about Rahner kind of makes me wonder, you know, what if he loses, and you know, obviously we still have the ballots to count. When we get together next week, and I want you to think about this in advance, it's a twofold question. Is one, where goes the Republican Party, regardless of what happens with Rahner, and where goes the Democratic Party, regardless of what happens with J.B. Pritzker? But we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, good morning, Ricky, to you and your guests. My question, and I know all politics, you know, is local, but if the Democrats do take over the House and there is, for lack of a better word, a blue wave, what will be maybe an issue that they will get behind nationally moving forward to galvanize the base? So that's my question. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bob?
Well, we've already heard they're counting their chickens before they're hatched. But you know, we're gonna start looking at Trump's tax returns. Apparently, or going to attempt to. We're going to try to enforce the emoluments clause. We're going to try to protect Trump's war on the climate, I guess, and perhaps
the I word.
There's some are talking about that, although some of the Democratic leaders are trying to tamp that down, at least for now. So there's a lot on their plate, whether they're actually going to go all in on it and whether they can get very far, given the fact that they very likely won't control the Senate, is another question.
David?
We're going to relitigate the 14th Amendment here in the United States, and whether a president can change that'll be an issue. The other thing, at a more specific level, I would think Democrats in the House, if they do take control of it, will be pushing hard on health care. They've actually gotten the Republicans to start talking about pre-existing conditions. I mean, it's hard to understand some Republican candidates at times because they were so adamant against Obamacare, and now they kind of just mumble when you ask them about it. And so that'll be an issue, Ron, that health care, that I think will be one to mobilize the Democratic base and force a hand in the Senate.
Yeah, they don't just mumble, David. I mean, we caught Peter Roskam last week. BJA runs a PolitiFact, Illinois. And he, in a debate, said that the Washington Post fact checker had totally debunked claims that he was, he had tried to do away with protections for pre-existing conditions. And, of course, they hadn't. It's a total lie. And there are seven other Republican congressmen who are saying that, running those claims, and refusing to apologize for flatly lying about it.
The other question, Rick, that you asked was, what about Trump? What do Republicans do if they do poorly? And the answer is, he controls their nomination. I don't see anybody challenging him. We'll have to see what happens. But the other thing is, Democrats are all going to be excited about, oh, wow, we did well, and Trump, you're next. Well, the old saying in politics, you can't beat somebody with nobody.
Right.
And so the question we're going to start asking next week is to Democrats is, okay, who you got? And
we'll know
what kind of answer they come up with.
Well,
2020 starts next week.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. We know the 2020 election starts next week. Very quickly, race to watch here in Illinois, and we wrote a little bit about it in our Sunday paper. I think the Illinois Attorney General.
Yeah.
Race.
Yeah, it's apparently closer than you think, only because you see Kwame Raoul being far more aggressive in his advertising, which suggests that he's a little worried.
Well, and the fact, I thought it was interesting that Erica Harold, the Republican candidate, final weekend of the campaign, basically was only bought limited TV broadcast time in the Chicago market. There just isn't really much more to buy, but that they didn't have any reserved in advance here for a race that, even Raul's supporters say, is going to be closer than, among the closest of the statewide campaigns. And so,
Is she picking up votes just from people who want to check on Governor J.B. Pritzker?
It could be.
Well, and that's her last ad. Is basically, if even though she's gotten $3.5 million from Governor Rauner and Ken Griffin, one of Rauner's allies, her commercial basically, in essence, I think, throws the governor under the bus and says, if Pritzker wins and you've got Madigan, I'll be the independent check on them. It's a very interesting strategy. Bob Sector from the BGA, David Yepsen from Iowa Press and Iowa Public Television, formerly the Paul Simon Institute. Both of you gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for agreeing to be on next week when we recap all of the election results. Thank you so much.
Rick. Okay, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.